As I spill water all over my face.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing. All right, well.
Contact makes your proprioception better.
What a good start. What a good start. So, Fran, thank you for joining us. This is Sarah Rusnak. And today I have asked JP Frank to join me for a conversation about themselves as it relates to their relationship and experience with contact improvisation. And if you don't know exactly what contact improvisation or contact improv or CI is, then stay tuned, because my goal is that after listening to this conversation, you'll be able to say what contact improv is in your own words, and you'll also realize whether or not it sparks your curiosity in a way that makes you want to give it a try or develop it as a movement practice in your life. My goal with this conversation is to speak to people who are curious about CI and help them to feel safe enough to try, while also bringing some understanding and calm if they have any apprehensions about it. So I'm just going to jump right in and read JP's bio. JP Frank has been dancing contact improvisation since 2014. They have trained with a diverse group of CI teachers and practice CI to recover from the constant navigation of verbal exchange. They revel in how CI rewires our connection to each other, to our own bodies, and to daily movement at large. JP facilitates with clarity, creativity, and juicy drops of inquiry, all influenced by a decade of facilitating somatic meditation, trauma-responsive movement trainings, and multiracial community dialogues on power, identity, and social change. I love all that. JP, welcome, and thank you for taking the time with me today.
Yeah, I'm pumped. All right. Talking about contact. I talk about it to everyone, every grocery cashier, every person on the airplane next to me. So,
do you? You figure out how to get into that
conversation? Yeah, I'm a bit of an evangelist.
Yeah, well, obviously, you love it. And before I get too excited with my questions for you, let's start at the very basics. And in your own words, you know, I don't know if it's the history of what you've learned or what you know now, or maybe a little bit of both. What is contact improvisation?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways that it's described, and it would probably be described differently by someone 50 years ago when it was first being initiated in Ohio in a college campus versus now versus someone in the Southern Hemisphere or in Mexico and in the United States, in Europe, in Japan or Thailand. Like, it's spread all over the world. So I think one thing that's really nice about contact improv is that it's improvisation, and it's part of that improv is it's evolving and changing over time and over place. But for me, I really resonate with one definition I read once by someone named Ernie Adams, and he talks about contact improv as he asked this question of, like, imagine what it would be like if you could surf, wrestle, dance, and do Aikido at the same time. And that's kind of like contact improv. And he also calls it a moving massage. And he emphasizes that it's all about deep listening to yourself and to your partner, and staying in the lack of predictability and the attunement. Those aren't exactly his words, but I like that he emphasizes, like, it's unpredictable and it relies on the attunement to yourself and your partners that you're moving with. So I think for me, what I would add to that is that contact is it's a meditative practice that, unlike meditation that you do sitting down and really focusing on yourself, it's like a trifold meditation. You're meditating on yourself and your own sensations, your own thoughts, your own desires, your own longings or aversions. And then you're also meditating on your environment and what's around you. And you're also meditating on whoever you're in connection with and what their nonverbal cues are telling you. So it can be really challenging in that regard, but it also teaches us a lot and teaches us a lot of skillfulness of deep listening in all of those atmospheres, and then responding in the current moment to what's happening. And what that looks like is, I often tell people, if you put a bunch of children in a room together who all came from different countries and didn't speak the same language, and you were just like, okay, you have an hour to like be with each other, what you would start to see unfold is similar to contact improv. Mm-hmm. People get curious about one another, find ways to kind of look at each other, move around each other. And then, you know, if it's invited, hopefully with kids, maybe that practice of consent would not be so strong, but that there's consensual ways that we engage in exploring with our bodies and putting certain parts of our bodies in contact with each other, or putting weight from our body onto another person's body. And we learn how in contact improv to do this in a way that's skillful and safe and consensual and really fun and really opportunistic for learning a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love the meditation part that you spoke to. And I'm imagining that everyone who works with contact is going to have their own unique experience of it. And I don't have a lot of experience. However, I do have more of this, how to move in my body, a lot of practice of yoga and mindful movement and personal dance. And so the addition of contact improv with a partner, even though it has been somewhat provocative in that there's like maybe a little bit of resistance, I get into the way I can drop into it does sometimes, it's for me, it's closing my eyes and feeling the other person and staying in tune with myself. Mm-hmm. Again, that's my experience from the little bit of experience that I've had. Mm-hmm. That's where I've just a few different times felt a little bit of flow with that. And it's mm-hmm. nice. It's fun and playful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you mentioning the apprehensive part. And I think what you were saying in the beginning about that some people might have hesitation or be curious, and to see if this stokes some interest. But even though I am an evangelist about it, I don't walk around assuming that like this is for everybody or everybody should do this. I think that all of us have different outlets for healing and for playfulness and pleasure and connection. And some of them don't involve touching other people, and that's great. And for those who are interested in both the healing and the liberation that can come from, and the connection that can come from exploring non-sexual intimate touch with others in this way that is like moment to moment decision-making and listening. And something I really like about contact is at any moment being given complete permission to leave a connection for any reason without an explanation, which is much harder to do even in other environments where it's explicitly permitted. But I'm thinking about other dance, social dance contexts. Like I've gone to salsa and fusion dance events where you're told like at any time you can end a dance. But when you're like in a song dancing with someone, it's very challenging to like in the middle of the song be like, actually, I'm done. it takes overcoming a lot of like social conditioning and taking care of the other person's feelings. But in contact, there's no music guiding. That's another thing about contact, is it's, if there is music, it's usually like more kind of drone like music that's not really defining how the participants are moving or like when they're starting and ending connection with other people. So there's, it's actually incumbent upon the experience to start and end dances at when it feels right to you, or start and end connection when it feels right to you, and to practice not taking it personally when someone else ends a connection with you, because that will happen over and over again in contact. So we get really, we get a lot of opportunity to practice like flexing a behavior that I don't really know other environments where I get to do that as much. Even like ending a conversation prematurely, if you know you're, someone's sharing with you, to just like cut them off and be like, actually, I can't listen anymore. Like, I'm being really fatigued by your energy, whatever we might be feeling sincerely. There's a lot of reasons we won't be honest. So when we remove that like verbal need to explain and then engage in an agreement, a social agreement that you will at any moment disconnect, it's just, it's a great opportunity, I think, to apply, to learn how to like also be more clear in other situations when like, oh, I'm not really feeling this, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to give myself permission, or I'm going to give that person permission to end the connection, whatever that might look like.
I love that. I love that idea of cross training and practice and strengthening a muscle for those kinds of situations. The practical application right there was just stood out to me of there's so many times I'm in conversations either directly or third party where I can feel my own tension or anxiety or disconnect rising, and then I stay there anyways, or feel an obligation to. And it is something that I want to work on getting better at. So I'm going to bring that to my contact practice, knowing that, you know, that's something I'm strengthening, is that ability to step in and step out and have it become more common.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I think it can be a great intention to walk into it, or to go into rather a contact experience, and be like, I'm gonna stop in the middle of every dance before I normally would, right. Just withdraw from the person.
Yeah. Yeah. I might do that.
Something else that I was thinking about along those lines, and you know, back to why someone might be hesitant, and for good reasons around the form, and also maybe just totally disinterested forever, and is that the nature of touch has so often carried so much harm with it. And that primary way that a lot of people have been harmed, you know, has been through their body not being respected, or their boundaries not being respected. So there can be a lot of hesitation in this form. Like, oh, I don't know if my body will be respected, or maybe I have an injury, a physical injury, or an emotional injury, or a spiritual injury, or something that was caused by another person trespassing a boundary. And so I think it's really important that if that's the case, that we're going into contact containers or classes where there is a skillfulness of the facilitator or the group that's holding the space around agreements and around the pace of the exercises, and really giving people a lot of permission and options around, and practice around consent and listening and communicating around these kinds of exchanges, and saying no, or respecting someone else's boundaries, or listening and understanding what our boundaries are and being able to communicate them. And I think that going into just like a really unfacilitated jam environment might not be the best place to explore. So the just contact improv can be really different depending on like a structured class versus an open jam. And depending on who's facilitating or holding the space, I think some spaces are trying to hold, there's this dichotomy that can be common of like, oh, total self-responsibility. And like you show up and you're responsible for yourself and you're responsible for saying no. And then there's what I like, a little more nuanced approach of like, yes, you're responsible for yourself, but we're also all responsible for the collective. And some of us have a easier time or easier access to our yes or no's for various reasons than others. And so we all want to hold this spirit of like trying to really deepen our skillfulness around listening and around getting more skillful around reading body language and attuning ourselves to each other beyond just even words of yes or no, that there's so much that we can pick up in someone's system and in our own system. And that it's a shared responsibility. So that's the kind of space that I hope to hold when I'm offering contact, and that I strive to hold. And one way I do that is using agreements and using consent-based practices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that was my experience in the workshop that I took with you too, is that the structure and context was set up really clear in a way that I could feel relaxed, and I knew what to expect. I knew what was coming. So it really gave me that sense of trust.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, good to hear.
Yay. Yeah. And so speaking of the verbal communication versus nonverbal, mm-hmm. or cerebral analysis, which I love, and then something different, like that we can mm-hmm. communicate without cerebral analysis, that dropping into the body, it can be a really mm-hmm. lovely thing. So what really caught my attention in your bio and made me take pause was when you said that you use CI to recover from the constant navigation of verbal exchange, mm-hmm. and that you revel in how CI rewires our connection to each other, to our bodies, and to daily movement at large. And I think you've been talking about that already in the things that you've said just in this past bit of our conversation. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I know you from your work with Yoga Behind Bars, where I was a volunteer, and that's like intense work. And I know you care about social change, and you've been in advocacy type work. So tell me about this, that navigation of verbal exchange and how contact rewires.
Mm. I don't think I fully knew who I was until I got deeply practiced with contact improv. And the reason I say that is that the part of myself that relates through words is like, I know that part of me I've known for a long time, and it's my primary mode of relating with people. And I would very much give it like a personality. It's like, you know, enthusiastic, very direct, unapologetic, sometimes interrupting, sometimes judgmental, and fairly articulate most of the time, and like quick, like the words come quickly, and sometimes like more, and like they come quickly and then I'm like, oh, can't take it back. Right? And on the other hand, what I've come to find out about my communication through touch and movement is like, I would personify that so differently. I would personify that as like very warm, very generous, very slow, very attuned, deep listening, generous, like, and those are all really wonderful things. And so if I hadn't discovered how to relate with people through touch in this way that's also about really listening to your desire and following your instincts and giving permission to be slow, which when I think about most of our touch with other people that aren't our lovers, it's like sports and things where it's fast. Like, can't really think of any sport where you're like slowly touching another person and deeply listening to that person and having them deeply listen to you. So I think there's a rest for me in that, that verbal exchange, though I love it, I love talking, I love, you know, debating and all the different ways that we can relate through words and sharing deeply with our words in vulnerable ways, all the modes of verbal sharing, I love that, but it does feel like it depletes me. And I feel like I have to like take time and be quiet. But in a world where you aren't in touch relationship with people, it's like being quiet means being isolated potentially. Whereas having this other practice that doesn't require me to enter into that verbal mode, which can be depleting and exhausting and limited, I have this other option of I can access this whole other part of myself that actually tends to be mostly very restorative to access, and sometimes also challenging or provocative or confronting, but less so the more that I practice. Mm-hmm. The more that I practice, it becomes kind of this well of resource and energy and restoration and rest. So that's the part about verbal exchange. Like, and it's funny because I actually think conflict in verbal exchange is not fun, but conflict, like intentionally bringing the part of us that like wants to kind of fight or be feisty, like consensually into touch, can be so fun. So it's also just like a different place to work through. Like, I went to a contact event and I was really pissed about this thing happening. And I was like, is there anyone here who will have like an angry dance with me? And I had this just like very, you know, pushy, containing, like consensual, just like rageful dance with someone. And it was really cathartic and really fun and connecting. So it's also an opportunity to process things still with someone and in our bodies that we might otherwise rely on words or like self-internal practices like meditation or other things.
So neat. I love that you had that idea and then there was a willing participant too. It just makes me think about the all the places we can go when we have playmates, adult playmates, mm-hmm. and people who are willing to do things a little differently or try something new.
And I think it's not dissimilar from how we are with animals or with children. Like sometimes and it's so funny how, it's not funny, it's actually really sad to me that, and it's indicative of so many wounds, I believe, collectively, and that we permit ourselves to really listen to what we want with our animals and how we touch them. And same often with our children. So we'll engage that in that whole range from like very sensual, slow petting of an animal to kind of soothe it, you know, and maybe taking pleasure in the feeling of their fur or the feeling of, you know, the animal nestled against your body. And then we'll also like roughhouse with the animal and play and tease it, and that's really fun, or like tackle it, or be and then same with children, like, you know, they're laying down and trying to soothe them for sleep, and there's like this kind of soothing, caressing, and nestling and nuzzling that can happen, and there's also wrestling and playing. But then when it comes to another adult, it's like, no way, that's a come on, or that's going to be perceived as sexual. And so then, you know, we miss out on this like incredible way to connect and play and nurture with our friends and with people that maybe we want to get close to or are curious about, but there's all these norms that say like, no, that's not okay.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, so the animal part is so relatable. I'm a big dog lover, and yeah, that full range with them, from giving a dog like a deep tissue massage to being totally rowdy and teasing and just riling up the energy. And yeah, I have to agree that it is, it seems almost unnatural, though that wasn't your words, but in my agreement, I'm adding, seems almost unnatural to segregate such a wide range of ways of being with each other during our adult lives.
Mm-hmm. And so much of it is because of our modern relationship collectively with sex and sexuality. And that at the same, on the one hand, like we're very sexually repressed and like fearful around sex and sexuality, but then we also are like, it's the ultimate relationship and the most important relationship is someone that you're sexual with. And if you're romantically involved, you're definitely sexually involved. And there's just this very like binary thing that happens, when in what it results in is that any kind of touch that we might share with someone, it becomes very confusing potentially and perceived maybe as sexual or as like not appropriate. And I think there's a really easy test for this, I think, that anyone can do for themselves, is like find someone that you have a platonic relationship with and see how long you can hug them until like you start to feel weird. And you're like, there's this moment. And like, who decides what that moment is? I think what has decided it is culture and conditioning, not actually ourselves. I think it's a very externalized, like, what is the other person thinking? Or what is, like, how does this look on the outside? And I think it's sad that we need things like potentially alcohol to kind of inhibit that social and bring in like what is a more maybe myopic kind of way of being, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, what do I really want? Oh, I want to be close to my friends. And you see people who otherwise like wouldn't be so cuddly and touchy with each other become that way. And I really think it just shows that like it's the bigger picture perspective and holding the cultural context that limits that determines when that awkwardness starts in. Or another example is like holding your friend's hand, like a handshake, right? Like a handshake is like, okay, but what if you just like kept your hands together? Like how long can you keep your hands together until it's like, this is weird. This is starting to feel really intimate. I'm like, and contact improv just like explodes all that.
Mm-hmm.
After practicing it now, I feel so much more comfortable with prolonged physical contact with like my family members and my friends, and especially if they practice contact too. There's just such a more like in the moment decision making locus of like influence, rather than this like what's appropriate and by whose standards. It's like, what do we want right here? Oh, we want to like snuggle a little bit and this feels really nice. Or I want to touch your feet. Do you want me to touch your feet? I want to give you a foot massage. Like, will you rub my back? Like, let's hold hands while we walk. Like, these are all things that I never did with my friends before. And now it's just like baked into my humanity in my community, and it feels really good.
Yeah, so sweet. Again, I just love that if we look at practicing contact as a personal practice and community practice and something that feels good in the moment, it can also be something that is cross-training for the rest of our life and our relationships that are really important, and how we show up in our relationships, and how we can be authentic in ourselves as we navigate the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, love that. One more question before we, that's just keeps like popping in. What about age? And, you know, what do you see out there? Because I've had a couple people talk to me about it, and they are living in bodies that are maybe beyond what we would consider middle age. Mm-hmm. And they seem unsure. They're not sure mm-hmm. if their bodies can handle that or if they fit in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great. Well, I think age is just one category, right? Where people have different identities and they are going to look around and see who's mainly participating and be like, oh, I belong or I don't belong, or it's accessible to me or it's not accessible to me. So race, gender, sexual orientation, gender, identity, class, all the language, all those things can impact what often we see is not different from a lot of healing modalities and movement arts spaces, yoga and meditation and dance and contact improv. Well, I shouldn't say dance. I mean, dance is like the most, one of the most diverse and like origin, human origin story activities, but these kind of spaces, especially that we're paying for, that are kind of like, especially kind of, perceived as like newer, non-normative, kind of hippie ways of being, there's all sorts of labels that may or may not be useful. But that being said, we know who shows up in these spaces. It's mostly white people, middle class or upper class people who have able bodies. And so it's a real challenge, I think, to hold that awareness and create spaces that are more inclusive. And that's a whole nother conversation we could have that I'm certainly not an expert on, but have learned a lot and been really grateful to have learned a lot about. So age in particular, which you asked about, I think that contact, it goes back again to like what kind of atmospheres are the facilitators and the space holders and the more seasoned dancers or movers in the space trying to hold. And so I really appreciate environments where there's options and different ways to engage, and there's a consideration that being a witness, resting, taking breaks, modifying the practice and making clear boundaries for yourself and communicating to those others around what you will or will not do or want in a connection with a partner. All of that can help create a lot of safety for someone, not only, you know, who might have less mobility or strength or flexibility or ability, or also comfort, or, you know, any of the things that might hold us back from like fully participating in all of the options that we might see. And there's some environments where it won't feel welcome because there isn't an awareness around that. But I believe that, like at the class that we're going to teach, there's going to be different ways to engage. And I love it when I see people going into something that I set up, tell their partner, actually, I can't take weight on my head. I recently had a concussion. So can you put weight just on my shoulders instead? Or I don't want to practice any lifts, or I can't take your weight. Contact improvisation does have these fundamental principles of weight sharing, of the point of contact moving all over the body, but there's so much fun to be had and curiosity to explore around having certain restrictions in place and working with limitations. So I love having dances where you are limited to like 1% weight sharing or no weight sharing, or where you don't use a part of the body, for instance, and you use other parts of the body to connect. So I think there is a lot of different ways that people can still engage. And I also will say, I just took a workshop for 10 days from Andrew Harwood, and he's 70 years old and has been teaching contact for like 50 years. And he just like really modeled like going and like participating and then like leaving the space and like going and doing his own thing and like coming in and participating. He's still a really skilled full dancer. But yeah, I think that, I think it's like just about, can you, you know, really listen to your body and be encouraged to listen and respect your body and be given options for how to participate. But more so than most practices, like the last thing I'll say about that is like some people participate, like participation can look so different. It can look like walking around the space and having little moments with people with your hands. It can look like lifting people on your shoulders. It can look like sitting in the corner of the room and watching and taking a nap. Like, yeah, that was a very like all over the place answer to that, but it's such a big question, is right. Like who belongs? And if we default to the normative ways of being, then not very many people belong. But if we keep questioning that and keep listening to like, oh, you feel hesitant. Why do you feel hesitant? Okay, like how can I expand myself and how can we expand as a community and grow to help you feel more included? And how can I make myself feel more included? How can I like lean in a little bit more and like maybe do something that's scary or ask for what I want? That's a piece of it too.
Right. Now, I really liked listening to your answer there. And in my mind's eye, I was following along, creating like a visualization of a group of a complex group of people with a lot of different representation and people taking care and people playing. And you can still be near the playfulness without having to be directly involved the whole time. You know, you can dip in and dip out, and and loved hearing that bit about one of your mentors and a really seasoned practitioner being 70 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I want to wrap this up, but I do.
I know talk. For like 25 minutes.
Yeah,
we'll see if anyone listens to the whole thing.
Yeah, let us know if you heard us talking at this point, that you listened to the whole thing. And you know, we do have this workshop a week from today. Today is the 31st of October, and there's a workshop in Spokane on November 7th, and this is 2022. I am going to put this interview on the internet though, so maybe it'll last, and hopefully years to come, JP and I will be seeing contact, and JP's workshops will be going strong, and we can find her online and find out where she's teaching. And for now, where can we, what is the best way to contact you and stay tuned in to what you're up to?
Right now, the best way is probably to contact me by email until my website's up and running.
Okay.
So maybe we can.
Can I include that in the notes?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I'll do that. Okay. Friend, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your thoughtfulness in answering my questions.
You're welcome. Thank you. And since it is going to live on the internet, just knowing that language evolves and adapts, and most likely something that one of us or both of us said is already or will be offensive or harmful. Recognizing and apologizing and acknowledging, doing our best and being open to learning.
Right. Thank you for presencing that.
Thanks, Sarah.
You bet.